I'm Afterburner Al with EAA Radio. Almost every pilot in the upper Midwest and many more across the country remembers the day that Migs Field died. For one person, the destruction of Migs happened right before his eyes. Air traffic controller Michael Daffenberg arrived at work the morning of March 31, 2003, expecting to open Migs Tower to the first arrivals of the day. Instead, Daffenberg arrived in the pre-dawn darkness to find a chaotic scene illuminated by the glare of construction spotlights and the strobes and shouts of the Chicago media.
When I first got there, I could see the cranes with the spotlights that were shining downward. And that still led me to believe it was an aviation incident. I assumed they had already started cleaning it up. I assumed they had been there since 2 in the morning. Of course, that was a bad assumption because they probably would have called me at 2 in the morning or 3 in the morning, but they didn't. And when I got closer, you could see I passed 3 trucks or 4 trucks that were leaving as I was coming in. And then a couple more trucks left while I was waiting for that cop to get back to me about letting me into the tower. A couple trucks had a trailer on it with some sort of like pile driving crane or something. I'm not sure exactly. I don't know construction equipment that well, but it was something that I'm sure was used to break up concrete.
I met Michael on a sunny and breezy day in a park in DeKalb, Illinois, a smaller town west of Chicago, in the summer of 2006, 3 years after that morning on the lakefront. Michael didn't know at the time that he was in the middle of one of the watershed moments in the struggle between airports and the redevelopment movement. Daffenberg was ready to put ATC behind him after a stint in the Navy, which included a turn at the now-closed Glenview Naval Air Station. Following the completion of a bachelor's degree in college, he got a lucky shot at the privately operated Migs Tower through a friend. Daffenberg also aspires to be a writer, and besides the widely circulated essay about that day at Migs, he's also written about what it's like to watch the world go by the window.
I guess it's man-made is the first thing that comes to mind, and you always think of natural things being as beautiful as these sites can be, or as amazing or dumbfounding sometimes as these sites can be. And when you're 4 stories up or 5 stories up, you're almost isolated from this man-made world of lights. And when you're viewing it from that far away, it doesn't seem man-made. It seems like this, I love the word you use, tapestry or canvas. Yeah, canvas. Either word. I like both of those words for that. What does it evoke? I don't know how to say this without sounding cliche or dumb, but an artistic feeling, a sort of it's like when you look at a painting that you like, or you look at any piece of art that you like, looking at the city and the lights and the airport lights from the tower at night or right at dusk is like looking at art for me anyways.
From Migs Field, describe the geography of the Chicago area airports and what you may see in the sky at any one time with all those airplanes arriving to that particular area, the Chicago area.
It runs the gamut. We'll go back a few years first. When I was at Glenview, I mean, including Glenview, you would see military aircraft, we'd have anything from an F-16, F-14, those kind of jets to, of course, we had C-130s based there and P-3s based there. And then at Migs, an assortment of civil aircraft from, you know, the Cessna 150 all the way up to a G-5. And then you have O'Hare traffic that's constantly flying over your airspace. And you see that all the time, too. And, of course, those are all the carrier jets and things like that. So when you're at Migs and you're in Chicago, when you were working there, you probably, if you didn't talk to them, you saw probably one of the widest variety of aircraft I've ever seen at any airport. Well, the field itself looks like a peninsula unto itself, because you feel, when you're up in the tower, you can see how separated that northerly island really is from the mainland, you know, into Lake Michigan. It extends out. You have Barnum Harbor right there, which separates it, and nothing but a thin slice of land that carries all but a road that leads to the planetarium and Migs Field there. And then looking the other way is a beautiful sight when you see the skyline of the city.
Michael was hired 6 weeks before the destruction of Migs. He had just been released to operate the tower alone. As he drove to work in the darkness, he knew something was going on at Migs. As he scanned the stations to find more details, he was only able to catch the end of each live report. Soon, however, Michael would be part of the story as he arrived at Northerly Island.
The only people I talked to outside the first gate was the cop that let me. He let me in. The first gate didn't wasn't a problem once I said I worked there. So I thought, well, this must be an incident. He's just letting me in. It's no big deal. There were a bunch of reporters off to the side. And when I pulled up to the gate, they were kind of all eyeing me a little bit. And then when they let me through, I could see them all really eyeing me. Then all of them were looking at me, taking pictures and stuff. I went all the way down to the second gate to the airport. And of course, there were two cars outside the gate there, two employees of the terminal. One was the desk lady and the other one was a lineman. And I knew them both on a semi-personal level. I got out and talked to them for a minute. And I said, what the heck's going on? And of course, a cop approached me too. And I said, you know, I'm the air traffic controller on duty. I got to get up in that tower and have it open at 6 a.m. And he gives me a little flack about it and says, look, no one's getting in. And I said, you know, I made it very clear. I said, look, this is FAA law we're dealing with here, you know, federal law. You need to go check on this and then you can get back to me and let me know. You know, and I was being nice. I wasn't being a jerk about it or anything. I didn't know what was going on yet.
So you make your way to the tower cab and you get your first look out at what's going on in front of you on the runway. Describe what you saw.
Well, first, I want to say when I was running, our first procedure when we get to the towers, we're supposed to stop off at the second floor of the tower where we have a fax machine and pick up the NOTAMs for the day. Well, the NOTAM was sitting there in the fax machine. I didn't even stop at the second floor. I was too uptight and excited at this stage to even think about the NOTAMs that were going on. And I went straight to the tower cab. And as I climbed the stairs, it was slowly came into view. And I focused on the X's right away. It was piles of debris next to pits that were carved. I mean, that's the only way to say it, carved into the runway. It was so definitively destructive to me that I originally thought it must be some horrible, horrible mistake. I just couldn't believe that it happened the way it did. And the idea that I had no prior knowledge to this was really bugging me. And as I plugged my headset in and began to take the weather, a helicopter called me and a phone call came in at the same time. That phone call happened to be the air traffic or the airport manager. He was very calm, and I cite the conversation, and they're very calm, very plaintive, and then he just hung up. He's not telling me anything at all.
And what were your interactions with airport management? You write about a couple tense exchanges with the airport manager.
Well, the second time he calls the tower, I'm not calling him because I know if I call him and I come at him with my questions, I'm going to get aggressive because this is when the anger's starting to really flow, and I realized that, sure, I was stuck, and I know a lot of other people got stuck because of that too, but I was really mad. I was like, no, now you're messing with my job and my career and all this stuff, and I just got started again. And he called back, and I let my anger slip a little bit with him. You know, I was like, look, you really stuck me here. You know, this is not right, and I wanted an explanation as to why I didn't get a phone call. I needed a heads up. And he was saying things like, you didn't need a heads up. This isn't your airport. You have no authority. You're not the supervisor. He was telling me this. And now, of course, all that was doing was getting me angrier. And I couldn't speak with him. I couldn't really talk to the man anymore after a while. And that's why the last phone call ended up with him basically saying something along the lines of, well, it was in the NOTAM. You know, like as if I was supposed to read the NOTAMs at 4 a.m. before I came to work or something as I left my house. I don't know. And he said, so no plane was going to come in. There was no danger of a low fuel plane or anything. So you have nothing to complain about, is essentially how it ended. And so I was like, look, man, you know what you did. You know, and I said, you know, thanks a lot.
You say that the airport manager said that the runway was closed, but the airspace was open.
That's correct, which confused me at the time. It was something I never dealt with. I didn't know the specific rules on it or anything like this. I've had a closed runway. I've had a closed helipad. I've had every landing surface on my airport closed, and we were still operating aircraft, but the airport wasn't never closed. So when he said the airport's closed, I kept asking questions like, well, can I land helicopters on the good helipads, which they didn't tear up? No. He said, the airport's closed. And I said, well, if the airport's closed, then I shouldn't be talking to anybody on the frequency, correct? He says, no, the airspace is still open. I said, so we have MIGS airspace, but there's no airport, no MIGS airport. And essentially, he was saying, yes, that's correct.
You talked a little bit about speaking with someone at the FAA while this was going on when you arrived at work. What did they have to say about the fact that the runway was closed, the airport was closed, but the airspace was open.
Well, I talked, it was a woman, and I talked to her one time. The supervisor handled all the other calls. By the time she called back, he was already there, and then he went ahead and handled it. I'm talking about Ray, the supervisor. The time I talked to her, she called me. The phone was ringing off the hook all morning. I should say that first. And she asked me what was going on. And I was like, well, you're the FAA. I said, there was a NOTAM sent that MIGS is closed. And she says, yeah, but what's going on? I know MIGS is closed. And I said, well, I said, there's big ditches dug up in the runway. There's big X's just dug up. And I remember at first she's like, oh, X is in the runway. The runway's closed. It's kind of, she was real casual about it. But then I realized she wasn't hearing me right. And I said, now listen to me. It's dug up. There are ditches in the runway. There's rubble strewn across the runway. The lights are ruined. The runway is unusable. And when I started saying things like this, I could hear in her voice that she was a little more confused, it seemed almost. And she was like, and then I explained to her that the airport manager told me I have an airport that's closed and I have airspace that's open. I said, could you please tell me, you know, what I'm supposed to do and how is this possible? And she said that she wasn't sure herself.
An X means that the runway is closed, but normally how is that X displayed?
In paint. I've seen it in yellow, white, and red paint, depending on the pictures I've seen. I've never seen a closed runway, ever. We X'd out part of our runway at Glenview one time when they were redoing it, but the other part was still usable. So we had a big red X, two of them, as a matter of fact, for about 1,000 feet of our runway when we were repaving it one time. So that's what you do. You just paint it closed. And that's the universal symbol. All pilots know if they see X's on the runway, that is a closed runway that they should not land on. Of course, special circumstances and emergencies, you know, barring those. But yeah, that's a closed runway. You don't have to dig X's in the runway to close it.
So this was a permanent X?
Most certainly. This was somebody who was sending a message. It wasn't somebody who just wanted to close the runway. It was somebody who wanted to say, I want this runway, not only do I want the runway closed, I want it demolished. That's what he was saying when he did that. Because if you just wanted to close the runway and then fight it out in the courts, you'd have painted X's, because you wouldn't want to risk, I think estimates at the time were bouncing around $5 million to $7 million just to replace the lights. And I mean, another how many million of dollars just to repave the runway, and millions and millions to go back into the wiring. I guess they ripped up wires without thinking about it at all. They just came in and treated it like it was a warehouse about to come down, and they knocked it down.
For a controller, is it frustrating to have that kind of control taken away from you?
That feels like your airport. You're taking care of it. It's your baby. You have a responsibility, and it's a big responsibility. It was frustrating. Let me put it this way. That day, a lot of people say air traffic control is a stressful job. That day was the most stressful day I ever had in my air traffic control career. And I hardly worked any traffic.
In the midst of your anger, you fight back the only way you can. You start clearing news helicopters into your airspace.
Oh, yes, yes. And it's not that this was some abnormal thing. It's that a lot of times you don't want a helicopter just hovering at the approach end of your runway and things like this. You know, it's not something that you'd normally allow. Well, I allowed these helicopters. One guy asked me if he could come down to within 200 feet. I said, sure. I said, you do whatever you want. Just you cannot land on my airport, you know? And I let them do anything. I let them get, a lot of them got real close because, like you said, I let my anger out this way by saying, okay, fine. You're going to stick me with a closed airport. I'm going to make sure everybody has the story.
You talk about someone else who helped you out that day, another coworker.
Oh, Ray came in. He was the supervisor. He's the one that got me the job in the first place. Good guy to talk to when you're feeling nervous or you're frustrated like I was that day. And he called me down on the phone right away. He was like, I'll be in, blah, blah, blah. But I knew, I could tell by his tone that he didn't know what really was going on. I told him that it was dug up. I told him the runway was ruined on the phone, and he wasn't believing me. And then when he got up into the tower, it was like an hour and a half, 2 hours later after I talked to him, he come walking up there and his mouth was open. He didn't say anything for like minutes. And I was working the traffic. I was talking to the fly-throughs. I took the weather once before I even talked to him. And finally I said, see? I was like, see, Ray, look what they did. I told you, they ruined the airport.
How long did you remain on duty that day, and then how long did the airspace stay open after that day?
That I worked a normal shift. I was there until 2:30, 6 to 2:30 or whatever it was. And then my relief came in, and he had to stay there till 10 and quote-unquote close the airspace. You know, of course, the airport's closed. You don't have any closing procedures. You don't do anything. So I worked a normal day. We worked normal days for the next, I said 2 weeks in the essay, but I got to be honest with you, my memory is a little faded on that. It was a week to 2 weeks. I mean, we had open airspace for a little while, and we were still coming up there taking the weather and doing all that and still talking to fly-throughs for that week or 2 weeks. So,
Burk Lakefront Airport in Cleveland is right next to downtown. In fact, aircraft pass within hundreds of feet of Brown Stadium and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame when they're landing to the east. Why hasn't that city moved to close the airport?
Exactly. That's about all I have to say. I mean, your point's well taken. I mean, how many airports are we going to close? I mean, how much residential is around O'Hare? How many tall buildings are, like you said, right under arrival routes? Look at Rosemont Horizon. I mean, that is a catastrophe waiting to happen. You have a big concert that loads 30,000 people into that dome, and then you have a commercial airline drop out of the sky on an arrival route to O'Hare. I mean, that's everybody. Everybody in that stadium is going to be dead. Yeah, his reasoning was faulty all the way around, because there are airports all over this nation that are within feet of residential, business buildings, tall buildings, high-density city areas, you name it. And so for the reasons he wanted to close MIGS, he should have closed O'Hare, Midway. Maybe DuPage should be the local airport. I'm not sure.
It has been widely reported that Mayor Daley has had alternate plans for Northerly Island, the area of land upon which MIGS is located.
This is more politics. I could talk about the rumors we talked about in the tower. He did it for his wife because he wanted a green front to the lakeshore. He wanted a park there. And then later rumors were saying he wanted actually a gambling boat to set in Barnum Harbor attached to Northerly Island. I know he has this park thing, and that's what everybody was focusing on. He basically said earlier in his political career that he wanted to make the lakeshore in Chicago green. And, of course, MIGS Field was going to have to come down for his dream to come true.
Who uses the airport? Can the city justify keeping such valuable land for an airport when it could be developed in other ways?
First thing I'll tell you is that the airport manager made this very clear that that was city property. That no one else had anything to do with it, and the city could do whatever they wanted with their property, period. And boy, did they hit that point home, both to me on the phone that day, the first day, and I remember hearing it on the news constantly. Daley even was saying stuff like this. It was my airport. It was our airport. Chicago can do what it wants with its property. My question specifically about MIGS is, I don't think you could turn it into a bigger revenue maker than it already was. Like I was going over before, all these corp jets, these people flew in, they would spend the money in Chicago, have their meetings here, stay the night in hotels here, buy the fuel. All the employees that worked at MIGS, the lady behind the desk, all the linemen that worked there. There was a fire department station there. I mean, you talk about safety issues. We had a helicopter right in the loop. I mean, you can't lose that. That helipad was moved to a individual helipad a mile or so south, or a mile and a half south or so of MIGS Field, because I remember they moved it down there the week they closed the field. And I could tell that they had anticipated closing the field, and somebody knew about it weeks beforehand because they arranged for a helipad to be set up for the fire department a mile and a half south or 2 miles south. So it's hard for me to imagine that. I guess what I'm saying is, sure, a city has the right to do what it wants with its property, especially if it can increase its revenue. However, in the MIGS scenario, that's just not true. What he did was, not only did he decrease the revenue of the city, but he ended up having to pay more money out for what he did.
After the cessation of ATC services at MIGS, Michael was eventually offered a job at another tower in Appleton, Wisconsin. Daffenberg says by then, his experiences at MIGS and the hostile working environment at his new tower brought a quick end to his career 2 weeks later. Today, Michael is working on his writing career and has local political aspirations in the DeKalb area. you can reach Michael at mdaffenberg@yahoo.com. I'm Afterburner Al, EAA Radio.